This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. Listening to an enthusiastic voice urging young women to jump into the world of startups and the freedom of running your own business.
First things first, go for it. Go for it despite whatever. If you want it, you can do it. Go for it, aim for the stars. Do not think of failure as the first thing. If you fail, 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 but keep trying.
In her mid-20s, Price Mahoza runs a popular nightclub in Kigali, Rwanda, KGL. Rwanda, her wide-eyed face says, is the land of opportunity.
We need people who understand what they are doing, so the investment in that area is very important. So the strength of partnership, therefore, is very key.
Rwandan President Paul Kagame also thinks his country is a land of opportunity, although he would extend that to all of Africa, speaking there at the 26th World Economic Forum on Africa. It's the first time that Rwanda has been given the opportunity to serve as the host country. It's a chance to show how far the country's come from the dark days of 1994. Rwanda was torn apart, you'll recall, as an estimated 800,000 people were massacred by Hutu extremists in 100 days. Today, Rwanda is a success story under the leadership of President Paul Kagame. Can the good news continue, and is Rwanda's success translatable around the whole of Africa? Joining me now from Kigali is Yinka Adegoke, Africa editor for Quartz, who's in Kigali covering the World Economic Forum, and Josh Ruxin, American author of 1,000 Hills to Heaven, Love, Hope at a Restaurant in Rwanda. He and his wife run Heaven Restaurant in Kigali. Yinka, what's the message Rwanda wants to give the rest of the world?
So Kigali, just like Rwanda, wants to show the world that it's a world-class city and it's able to hold world-class events. It has been doing so over the last couple of years. It's a concerted strategy by the government to become a business conference hub for East Africa, and they don't get much bigger than the World Economic Forum.
Josh Ruxin, is Kigali and Rwanda's success story translatable to the rest of Africa, do you think, or is there something very special about this country?
Well, my wife and I moved here 10 years ago, in great part motivated by the aspirations of this nation and of the government. And when I visit places like Uganda and Kenya, they're somewhat jealous of how far Rwanda has come with so little. And so I think the big hope with the World Economic Forum and other events and venues is not just putting Rwanda on the map, but also putting its version of progress on the map, essentially. If Rwanda can progress with infrastructure, with technology, with jobs, with tourism, then there's no excuse for the rest of the continent.
Yinka, what's an example of successful technology that's been installed and is in use in Rwanda and Kigali nowadays?
They built out a broadband network. The government sort of implemented in partnership with South Korean telecoms company, and they see this as an important strategy to them being able to compete on a global basis.
Josh Ruxin, will Paul Kagame essentially punt away the success by grabbing too much power, taking a third term, essentially becoming a kind of democratic dictator?
I think no one can argue with the success of President Kagame's administration. I mean, the country has come so far for the average Rwandan in the last 22 years that it's very hard for anyone here to argue with progress.
Although, Yinka, is a third term perfectly fine that we're just used to as two terms in the United States?
There has been huge progress in this country, but there is always the concern that you can have too much of a good thing. For the United States in particular, this is a difficult one because they've been a great aid donor and supporter of the government. But at the same time, what they have to take into account is that just right next door, the Burundian president is trying to go for a third term, and that's causing all kinds of potential problems there. On the other side, you have Democratic Republic of Congo has the same issue and with an unpopular president. So it's fine for one president, but I guess the U.S. can't be seen to play favorites.
Josh Ruxin, why doesn't economic success cross the border more successfully from Rwanda into Burundi that's having so many problems right now?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as was pointed out, Rwanda is very much at the epicenter of a number of challenges for the region. My hope, of course, is the reverse will happen, that Rwanda will shine a light on all the opportunities for these other countries that suffer from a lack of security, a lack of leadership, and, of course, horrible corruption.
looking at Africa now as a continent, what regions are awaiting the kinds of success that Rwanda is having right now? Yinka?
The story of this conference has been in the run-up to this year. Since the start of the year, commodity prices have been on the downslide. This has meant the economic forecast for the continent has been cut. Most of the discussion here has been around how this is more of an opportunity for the whole continent to stop relying on commodities, stop relying on just selling raw materials, and to start thinking about diversifying their economies, you know, to add value.
Get away from natural resources and the commodities market that's so subject to boom and bust. Josh Ruxin, speaking of a business that has nothing to do with commodities, how's life in heaven?
Life in heaven is quite good, especially this week. We were lucky enough last night to host Tony Blair and the Power Africa group that came in. So it's been extremely busy at Heaven Restaurant, which is the restaurant my wife, of course, built from the ground up here. If the restaurant business is any indicator of the direction Rwanda is going, then Rwanda is heading in the right direction, because we've just seen a massive influx of tourists, of business tourists, guerrilla tourists, and others coming through our doors at a higher and higher level year on year.
Well, an invitation there to have lunch or dinner with Josh Ruxin. He's the American author of 1,000 Hills to Heaven, Love, Hope, and a Restaurant in Rwanda. His wife built the restaurant Heaven in Kigali. That's what he's talking about there. Open for business today. Josh, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
And Yinka Adegoke, thank you so much. He's the Africa editor for Quartz. Talk to you again.
Thank you very much.
A warning now from Nigerian-born writer Adewale Ajadi about the seduction of technology and people who talk about transforming Africa by importing its future.
We never industrialized, so we don't have that social engineering thinking. And what it leads to is that we exclude the majority of our people in the design of the future.
Ajadi spoke to us last year. Our next guest, though, Adero Davis, is sensitive to that charge of excluding people. She is co-founder of Poa Post, a startup in Kenya. Her company is a parcel delivery app that connects drivers with people who need things delivered all over a smartphone. The aim is to get mail to some of the remotest places in Kenya for a set price and on time, and that's something the Kenyan post office simply doesn't do. Adero Davis, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hello. Thank you, John, for having me here today.
So you are sensitive to this issue of excluding people in the investments of new businesses and new industries inside Africa, right?
Yes, very much so. Poa Post, we came up with the idea because of the lack of efficient parcel delivery to rural communities, which is obviously not urban city centers where a lot of people focus, and that's where majority of funds do go. So in initiating our project, that's exactly what we do. We start from the bottom up.
So you address those issues with an app, with an army of drivers who are already working inside Kenya?
Yes. So we created an app that we just tested in March in Kenya, a small pilot. And basically a person just taps on the app. The geolocation pretty much picks up where they are, since there's no formal address system in Kenya, especially in rural areas. And then the nearest courier receives the message, goes to the home, picks it up, delivers it to the next destination. So we hire locally because there are no addresses. And so that particular courier knows that area very well. So they can just have a pinpoint, even though on the back end we're using longitude and latitude. And we realized when we were there, like, we have to teach, you know, map reading and just fluency with using and downloading apps in and of itself with the local communities, because we started in a very small neighborhood, Joska in Machakos County in Kenya, which is about an hour and a half away from Nairobi proper. It was challenging because we just really believe that it can work, because we tested it and we're like, oh, wow, it's working, you know? After, you know, it was just kind of crazy. But Africa, it's just the region in general, is just people, like, the corruption and you kind of worry about government, and you're like, okay, how do we do this in a manner so that we do not irritate, you know, particular governments, and they may try to shut us down and things of that nature. So we're trying to do it in a very respectful way, not necessarily do like a behavior change per se, but just bring new information to the people and say, hey, you really don't have to carry that jug of water on your head for 5 miles. Like, we can do this for you and we'll make it affordable.
But your challenge is selling to investors.
Yes.
This is an opportunity.
Yes.
Selling what you believe.
Yes.
Inside and that you see.
Yes.
In the people you talk to with the water jugs on their head.
Yes, exactly. That's the most frustrating part because you're like, I see it. You know, we had like 46 requests in one day after our pre-launch party. And to give some context, there's a startup here in New York called Postmates, which pretty much does the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And they had like at least $500,000 worth of funding. And when they launched with a $500,000, they were getting like one request per day. And which is, you know, and we had like ours cost $10,000 of our own money that we saved. And we were able, you know, to get like close to 100 downloads in 5 days, 46 requests in one day. So it's like to do the comparison and to see and say, oh, we're scared. I'm like, the demand is there. They're using it. And this is with people who did not have as much knowledge. We had to do a lot of manual onboarding, explaining how to download an app, because a lot of people do have mobile phones, and the penetration has been insane just from us going there for 6 times in a year where we're seeing feature phones, and then we're on a Matatsu and people have iPhones, you know, but they have it for a status symbol. So it was like, oh, we thought they weren't going to trust us. That's not the issue. The issue is they don't know how to use this thing.
Okay, what's your, you know, a year from now, should we check in with you? 2 years from now?
Yeah, a year from now, check in with us, you know. We're still chugging along and we're focusing on, you know, finalizing the product. And we have some very, you know, new me is an accelerator, is very interested in us and is keeps checking in like, where are you, where are you? So we're positive.
Co-founder of Poa Post, a startup in Kenya to deliver packages outside of the postal network and outside of the pre-existing Western shipping services that are very, very expensive. Darrow Davis, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, John.